From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
All right, so April Henry joining us on our Writer's Block podcast today. I'm so excited to have you on. I know we've met before. We did a story a couple years ago about this mystery, I think
it was a $5 bill that said, buy April Henry's book with this money.
Yeah, and we never traced the person, right? Maybe they'll be listening now and we'll get to the bottom of it. So I cannot believe how many books you're cranking out. I was looking at your website at the list and it said you've written 23, but you have your 24th coming out in August. And then there's another one.
25th in early 2020.
So that's in the editing stage right
it's
now.
It's actually all done.
Okay.
They're just working on the cover right now.
Oh my gosh. And so talk about just how this all came to be, because I read that you grew up in Medford. You described it as your family is not being very financially off, but it sounds like books were always a huge
thing. We were kind of a poor family. Actually, my dad was in TV, which you'd think was be lucrative, but in Medford, it was not particularly. So, we just never had a lot of money, but my dad took us to the library every Saturday, and I always had a huge stack of books, and books showed me all different kinds of worlds. So if it weren't for books, I don't think I would be where I am now, which is why I want to make people like to read.
Yeah, and it sounds like you even had an encounter with a famous author, and someone kind of saw something in you from an early age.
Yes, when I was in grade school, I started thinking maybe I could write my own stories. So I wrote a short story about a 6-foot-tall frog named Herman who loved peanut butter. And I decided that Roald Dahl, the guy who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach, would really like to read my story. So my dad could have said, that's a dumb idea. But instead, he showed me how in the front of a book, it has the address to the publisher. And he said, why don't you try sending it to him care of his publisher? So I sent it off to New York, and eventually it made its way over to England. And then eventually, Roald Dahl sent me back a postcard telling me how much he liked my story. And what he didn't say was that he took it with him to lunch and showed it to his editor. And she had a children's magazine called Puffin Post. She contacted me and asked if she could publish my story. So I was not paid for this story, and I actually had to subscribe to the magazine for a year to get the issue with my story in it, which was really expensive.
Yeah.
But I remember back then thinking, yeah, I could be a writer. But then as I got older, I just thought writers don't grow up in little towns, little logging towns. They probably grow up someplace cool.
Cosmopolitan.
Like, like New York or San Francisco, and they probably all speak French at home and go to boarding school and have a horse. I just thought there was no way anybody like me could be a writer, so I didn't start writing again until I was about 30.
And so in the meantime, you went to Oregon State University.
I did go to Oregon State.
You got a business degree or something?
I have a business degree with a minor in labor relations, which was like the dumbest idea ever. I think I saw a brochure about it, but I do not like cigarette smoke or people arguing. And for a long time, union negotiations were people in a room smoking and yelling at each other, so that would have been a terrible fit for me. But when I graduated, the economy was really bad. I moved out to Portland. There were no jobs. And I started working an actual split shift job at Nature's as a grocery checkout person. So I'd work morning, go home, and then have to come back and work some more hours in the evening. And because the economy was so bad, they people were actually taking those jobs.
Wow, is Nature's even still around?
No, Nature's morphed into Wild Oats, which morphed into New Seasons.
Oh, okay.
So there's still
Love
Nature's
new
people
seasons,
in New Seasons.
Yeah, and so you were doing all that, and the idea of writing was probably still bouncing around in your head, right? But I just, you know, it's not one of those things where you can think you can make a living out of it.
What happened with me was I was reading a book when I'd gotten from the library, and it was a really terrible book. And I kept reading it thinking it would get better, and it never got any better. The ending didn't make any sense, and the main character was too stupid to live. And I was like, this book sucked. And I wasted hours reading it, and then it was like a light bulb went on, and I thought, wait a minute, that book got published. Is that all you need to do, is write a terrible book? Because I know I can do that.
Right.
So I'm probably the only person that was negatively inspired like that, but I just thought, I'm capable of writing something as bad as this book, and maybe even better. So that's what got me started writing again.
I think a lot of people, when they read 50 Shades, probably had an experience. Nothing against that author. But, so talk about things. I know there were, you wrote a couple things before you finally were able to get something published, right?
Yeah. I wrote, my first book was kind of a bad autobiographical novel with a main character was a lot like me with better hair and was working at Good Sam and admitting, which is what I was doing at the time. And then I wrote a family drama that didn't get published, but it did get me an agent. She tried really hard to get a publisher. I wrote a book about orphan trains, which never sold. And then there was that book, Orphan Train, that was on the New York Times bestseller list, but I guess I was a little ahead of my time.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a book about a woman who vets vanity license plates, and that got bought by the very first publisher who saw it in a two-book deal.
Wow.
So people like Publishers Weekly were calling me an overnight success, and it was like, it took me 8 years to be an overnight success.
Right, yeah. And, so, and at that point, were you then writing full-time?
No, I was still working full-time. I remember when I got the call saying that we had made a two-book deal, and I thought, I'm going to quit my day job. And then they told me how much money it was for, and I'm like, I'm going to buy some new furniture. So I worked full-time and wrote a book a year for probably six or seven more years. And then I just took a leap and quit, because it's very scary to leave behind health insurance and benefits and steady income. I mean, as a writer, you only get paid maybe three or four times a year at best. And so you don't really know what money is coming in and how that's going to work out. And what I've learned is that money that you thought would definitely come in doesn't show up, and money that you didn't know about shows up, and it more or less works out. It's the more or less part that's frightening.
Yeah, well, and you're a mom too,
right.
So you have, you know, other people to take care of as well. And yeah, it's a little scary, but it seems like it's really worked out. Now, I know that you are really well known, and I know this because I know other authors, and if I tell them I'm doing a story with you or a pod, I saw Mary Elizabeth Summer last week, she's like, she is so good about researching and details. Like, that's kind of what you're known for. So tell us about just how you, because your stories oftentimes involve crimes and criminals and killings. How do you research stuff like that, and what lengths have you gone to?
Well, the current book I'm working on doesn't actually have anything to do with a crime. It's more like, in this book, the serial killer is nature. I was really fascinated by all those people who got stuck at Punchbowl Falls during the Eagle Creek fire about a year and a half ago. And so they were stranded, and they had to hike out with a fire at their backs. And some of those people were only wearing flip-flops and like edging along the side of a cliff where there's a straight drop down. And I thought that would be really exciting. So I wanted a character who knew first aid in the wilderness and would be able to help people. So I found that you can get certified in wilderness first aid. So I got certified last summer. Everybody there was way more interesting than me. They all did like sea kayaking or free rope, you know, free rock climbing without ropes. And I'm like, oh, I write books. But
but it's interesting.
Yeah.
Are there, I mean, you are really dedicated to finding out what
it
takes, right?
Yeah, I'm very dedicated. So for like that book, I wanted to know, I had a character who has diabetes. So I wanted to know what happens if you have type 2 diabetes and you hike for a long time and you don't eat. So I found a person who is a diabetes educator, and I worked with them to understand how I could have this person go into a crisis mode, get treated by my main character, and still be able to hike and have it be realistic. Like, I was like, well, what if someone found some huckleberries? You know, that would keep them going. And he was like, yeah, but that's just a simple fruit sugar, and they probably wouldn't be able to hike for that much longer. So we worked together to figure out an answer. I have a character who has asthma, which was one of the things that really happened to somebody on the Eagle Creek Trail. And I found out that EpiPens, which are used for allergic reactions, actually can be used to treat asthma. So I have another character who has an EpiPen on them, and my character figures out how to use the EpiPen. So I've been corresponding with a person, another medical person, to say, well, here's the dosage. And then it got confusing because I had given the EpiPen to a young character, and it turns out that they have a different dose than adults do. So I was like, will this still help my character with asthma? Because I want everything to work in my book and to be plausible. It doesn't have to be the most likely outcome, but it still has to be that it could happen.
And you don't
like
want
that.
An expert reading it going, wait a minute, this couldn't
happen.
That's not
right.
Is this the book that you're currently working on or the one that comes out?
I'm currently working on. The one that comes out in, the one that is coming out in January is based off that Kelly Swoboda guy who is the kidnapper that was stalking the girls at Wilson.
Yes.
And ended up being shot by the school resource officer.
Yes.
That one's called The Girl in the White Van. And then Run, Hide, Fight Back was kind of inspired by the Kenya Mall shootings mm-hmm. or the Paris terrorist shootings. I was just like, what would happen if there was a terrorist event here?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is set in a version, a mall that is definitely not Washington Square, even if it kind of looks like it.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I was going to ask you, are a lot of your stories, are almost all of them based in Oregon or the Portland area?
I do set everything in Oregon. I find it's easier to understand. And Oregon has, like, mountains and cities and earthquakes and the ocean. And so, yeah, small towns. So you have a wide variety of things you can pick from. And mm-hmm. I feel like if you set something in a different state, unless you've been there, you're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Right.
Like, I was in South Dakota recently, and I would not know that people there actually drink Diet Mountain Dew for breakfast instead of coffee, which is horrible.
Gosh.
I know. So I would get things like that wrong. I wouldn't understand that they're not normal there. So
I guess it would get you going in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, and back to your training, I know with the story involving the mall shooting, it sounds like you also trained with, like, you know, how these people who are stuck in a mall hiding from a shooter, mm-hmm. like if there's an emergency, like what kind of emergency kit would get one of them through, right, to survive a shooting like that?
Well, I looked at, for that one, I took an active shooter training with a retired cop. Mm-hmm. I talked to a guy who is a fireman and a paramedic about what's a scenario I could use where the cop, because now, you know, when there's a big active scenario like that, since Columbine, they've been trained to immediately go in and mm-hmm. try and stop everything. So that's too fast for a book. I can't really do a book in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what can I do to make that scenario slow down? And then I tried to figure out some clever things that could happen in the mall. I went to Washington Square and actually, not that it looks like Washington Square, it's definitely imaginary, but I looked at what you could see if you poked your phone out and were doing a video mode. Could
yeah.
you see, how far down the hallway could you see if you were, and you could see quite a bit.
Yeah.
So
do people ever look at
like
you
that.
Funny when you're doing something like
I
that?
I tried to look like I was tying my shoe so that they wouldn't think I was doing something super suspicious.
Yeah.
But I have taken, like, I took a 3-day class in LA a couple of years ago where you're fake kidnapped, and at the end of the class, you've learned how to get out of duct tape and rope and zip ties and handcuffs and how to make improvised weapons and how to steal cars, which was the one thing we didn't do,
yeah.
and how to make an improvised weapon. And so that class, you spent 2 days in a hotel room learning all that stuff, and at the end, you are fake kidnapped, you've got duct tape put over your mouth and a hood over your head, and you're handcuffed and you're all shoved into a van, and then they drive you around and threaten you and stun gun you. And then at some point they say they're gonna take a smoke break, and then they leave and they're only gone for about 15 minutes, and that's your time to pick your way out of your handcuffs using like a safety pin or a bobby pin from your hair, get your duct tape off and your hood off, and then you have a route you need to go in Santa Monica that is like 7 miles long, and there are 10 hunters you've never seen before looking for you, and they have a photo of what you were wearing when you went into the van, and they know the exact route you're gonna be on, and you have to figure out how to walk past them without them noticing.
Wait, people pay.
Yes, they pay good money to do this.
This was a lot of money.
Yeah,
for
I was. That's what I was thinking when this guy was stun gunning me. I'm like, I
oh
paid money
gosh.
For this.
Like a real stun gun. You were.
Well, you know, those stun guns only cost like $20 or something.
Yeah.
You can see them sometimes. And like,
yeah.
I would not personally use one for self-protection.
Yeah.
Because if you have a lot of adrenaline running, you don't really feel it. And probably someone who wants to hurt you has a lot of adrenaline running, and you're just going to maybe
yeah.
make them mad at you. You're not going to incapacitate them. It's not incapacitating. I just I personally would not, if I was going to get some kind of over-the-counter weapon, I might get a taser or something, but not that. I wouldn't use that.
I think you have one of the more interesting jobs I've ever... I mean, just the research part of your writing alone has got to be just fascinating. And some of these detectives and people you work with are like, oh, here comes April again with her dark and twisted mind.
I did ask this guy who's retired FBI. I was like, well, if somebody had their taser in stun mode and someone had a towel wrapped around them, you know, would it go through the towel? And then weirdly, I found a YouTube video of a guy doing the exact thing.
Oh my gosh.
He's like stun gunning himself, like going, ooh. So it turned out it does work through the towel.
Oh, I mean, I bet they're like, gosh, we hope she never actually does anything.
Well,
like
they do say, you know, cops make the best criminals and probably writers would.
Right.
Mostly make the best criminals, although that one local lady didn't do such a good job.
Yeah, but. On the news. Yeah, that's going on right now. But you do come from a line, I saw on your website, of some criminals in your family.
Yes, I do. Yes. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was on Deadline, so I should not have been doing anything. But all of a sudden, I thought, I wonder what would happen if I Googled my grandmother's name. And her name was Effie Satterwhite. Mm-hmm. So when I put it into Google, this whole Arkansas State Supreme Court decision came up from 1907. And at first, I thought it was a weird coincidence that the lady happened to have the same strange name as my grandma.
Yeah.
And then I read it, and I realized it was her. And so it turned out when she was... 18, she had a boyfriend. His name was Jim Wallace, and they'd gotten in trouble for kissing. Mm-hmm. And her brother caught them kissing and told Jim to stay away from her. And Jim said, no, my intentions are honorable. I want to marry Miss Effie. Mm-hmm. So he continued to date her. And in April 1906, he walked her home from a date, went to kiss her. She pushed him away. And then the town clock rang 11, and he said he had to go. And this time when he went to kiss her, she did not push him away. She went inside. And she said in her court testimony later, she heard a sound. She pushed aside the curtain to see what it was. And it was her father, my great-grandfather, running down the stairs with a shotgun. And he ran out, yelled out, Jim. And then when Jim turned around, he shot him. And then my poor grandma was out there crying and sitting next to him in the street and trying to put his head in her lap. And he stood over her. And this was in the court testimony, too, that he said, it's all your fault. You were always hugging and kissing that boy, and I couldn't trust you around him. And so he appealed his conviction, saying he shouldn't have to serve any time in prison because he was defending her virtue.
Oh, wow.
He did not get his conviction overturned, but he only served 2 years in prison for murder.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, my poor grandmother lived at home until she was over 30. I'm sure it's hard to find anybody to date after that point.
And, not a big selling
so
point.
So I was like, how do you live with your dad that kills your boyfriend, the guy you were going to marry?
Yeah.
And I was like, they explained a lot about her personality. So
did it inspire any of your story?
You know, I'd like to do something historical with like maybe a few, like a current time, I don't know, reincarnation. I just feel bad for her that she didn't end up with that guy.
Yeah.
But I haven't used that yet.
Well, there's an idea for you.
Actually, I have thought about it.
Good. I'm trying to remember, did you tell me the last time I saw you that you were also writing stories for, Running Zombie.
Yes, I did an episode of Zombies Run.
Yeah.
I did season 3, episode 43. So it's a running app. In fact, I was just running to it today.
Okay.
And they tell a little story about these dwindling band of survivors from the zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. There's a woman I can't remember her name, Powers something. Anyway, she heard somebody say, I would only run if zombies were chasing me. And she thought, that's an app. So it was like the biggest, I think she did it on Kickstarter or something.
Yeah.
So she got a lot of money, hired these actors, and then you listen to this story interspersed with musical interludes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to it, and I heard like Margaret Atwood was on it, and she was playing a survivor. And I thought, oh, Margaret Atwood is so famous that they've hired an actor to portray her. But she... As I listened to it, I thought, wait a minute, I think this really is Margaret Atwood. So I tweeted about it, and Naomi Alderman, that's her name. Naomi contacted me and asked me if I wanted to write an episode of it. So I said, sure. And it was super fun to write it. It was only dialogue.
Yeah.
So you can't explain unless you have someone say, we're in a studio right now and paint the picture, then that's really the only way you can say what is around them. So it was a challenge to do it. And then what was funny is I wrote it all and sent it off, and it, like 2 months later, she asked, when are you going to invoice me? And I didn't realize I was being paid for it. I just did it for fun.
Well, like, that is just such a, I remember now, because it was several years ago, I went and downloaded one of the apps, and I don't know if it was the same one, because I think there are several zombie running apps, and ran in Manzanita in this forested area. Had to turn it off because I was kind of scared. It's like a little dark, and I'm like, I'm just going to stick to my music.
Well, there's been times I've been running, and I thought, because you have to run 20% faster every now and then, they'll say, zombies, you know, run. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you don't run 20% faster, then it's like the zombies get you. Yeah. So I have been running through completely deserted, quiet neighborhoods yelling, no, no.
But it's a great example of how stories can come to life. And so you've got, it's called Run, Hide, Fight Back. Mm-hmm. That's coming out later
August
this
27th.
Year. Okay. And then next year, that book is, what's
it's called The Girl in the White Van, and that's coming out in January or February.
And that's inspired by the events from
Kelly Swoboda and Wilson High School.
Okay, wow. And then you're already working on the book that you were telling
Playing
us about.
Playing with Fire, and that will come out probably maybe like a year from this summer. So
you're exhausting. Okay. And any opportunities for, I know that you sign books for people, any upcoming events that you would want to tell
I'm
people
going
about?
To be at Portland Book Festival, I think November 9th. And then I think I'm going to be having a signing at Powell's in September. We're just working on the date.
Okay. So. Awesome. Well, April Henry, always so great to see you.
Good to see you as well.
I find you fascinating in your whole process. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.